And welcome back again. You're listening to The Magazine every Thursday from 2 to 4, interview with the stars and an assortment of different topics. Of course, Breakthrough Thinking is on 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 2 to 4, with our sports programming Wednesday and Friday. But here it is, The Magazine. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, alongside Greg Isaac and Joseph Airdo.
Hi, Ardo.
Oh, I looked at you and he said it. That's so funny. I forgot. That's how we do it. Okay, that's how we roll. Anyway, again, thank you to Christy Jacobson. Very, very cool. Out there and make a difference regarding hunger. And it is a shame in America that happens still. Actually, it's a shame all over the world. Joseph, back to you.
Yeah, well, we've got our second guest of the day on. We've got several today. But our next guest is a writer, a director, and his name is Andrew Weiner, and he wrote and directed this movie, The Frankenstein Theory. It opens tomorrow exclusively across the country, but here in Arizona, you can see it exclusively at AMC Arizona Center 24. And this is basically a found footage movie. About a disgraced college professor who leads a documentary film crew to the rim of the Arctic Circle in a desperate effort to vindicate his academic reputation and prove that Mary Shelley's literary classic Frankenstein is, in fact, a work of nonfiction disguised as fantasy. Thank you so much for joining us, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, hi, Andrew. This is Dave Isaac and Greg. Say hi.
Hey, Andrew. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
Great. Well, it's great to have you on. I saw this film, and you know, can you tell me a little bit about why Frankenstein? What piqued your interest in and made you come up with this idea that Frankenstein could perhaps be real?
Well, okay. Let me try to answer that question. I think it's a very good question. I'm looking at a book that's over 200 years old, and I'm not alone in having read this piece of literature that's as old as it is. And I think that it's because it's Mary Shelley wrote it. She started the novel when she was just 18 years old. Her life is, I think, absolutely fascinating, tragic and triumphant in equal parts. But there's something that resonates about that novel and about the character, not Dr. Victor Frankenstein, but the creature, which we commonly know as Frankenstein, although if you're a fan of the novel, you might know that Mary Shelley actually never named the monster or creature. It's not named Frankenstein, although everyone thinks of it as Frankenstein. But there's something, there's a certain amount of humanity to this character, which is not human, that I think people identify with, whether it's Boris Karloff's portrayal. He played the monster in several movies. Or just the book itself. It's one of those characters that, you know, just lives on and on and on. And I think that the book thematically wrestles with some really, really tough issues dealing with just, you know, what it is to be a human being. One of the major themes of that, of the book is loss. And another theme is, I think, like a fatal arrogance that Dr. Victor Frankenstein has in assuming that he thinks he can create this creature which will eradicate disease and death, and he's horribly, horribly mistaken. And this arrogance that he has leads to calamity. And so those are some themes that I find very powerful, which are repeated in literature, and it's something in setting out to make a movie, because it takes so long to make a film, you know, I need to find something that I'm very passionate about, and the elements of Frankenstein just really resonate personally for me.
Right.
Yeah,
I really like that you did make this more of about those themes and not so much just the monster. It was, you know, you played around with those themes. And as a filmmaker, as a director, what kind of preparations go into making a found footage film versus just a standard narrative?
That's a great question. This is the second fake documentary, if you will, that I've made. I made the first one was a movie I produced called Mail Order Wife, which I just love. It's like this very dark, twisted comedy. And they're deceptively hard to make. I've also produced a number of more traditional, narratively structured films in the found footage genre. Is tough. On the one hand, there's a certain amount of latitude. If you don't have a lot of money to make a movie, people are maybe like forgiving of shoddy camera work. That said, I am not, and I made sure that my film was beautifully shot. I had a cinematographer that I've worked with in the past who's got a great visual eye, and we spent a lot of time working together to develop the aesthetic for the film. But there's certain rules that you have to adhere to, because the camera is always operated by a character. Because if it's a fake documentary, you have to explain the point of the POV of the camera. In a traditional film, the camera is just an impartial observer of the scene. So if you want to do a crane shot or an aerial establishing shot, you can do those things. But if you want an aerial shot in a found footage film or a fake documentary, there has to be a character that you've created in the story that is getting you that aerial shot. So those are like just some of the like the obvious hurdles and things you have to keep in mind when making the film. But for me, you know, it's an end to storytelling. And for this particular movie, the format made sense. It was just, it's organic to the story. And so it made sense to make it a fake documentary.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, on top of that, since I've seen the film, I see, you know, you go to the Arctic and it's very cold. There's snow everywhere. I don't know about where this was filmed. Could you tell me where it was filmed and what kind of challenges that posed?
Yeah, well, we start out in Los Angeles, which is a lot easier to shoot than where we wound up. And then we go into the Arctic, and I wanted something that was felt warm and comfortable, because the film really is like an odyssey. You know, we go from the comfort of the character's own home in Los Angeles, and they go deeper and deeper into the wilderness, into the north, and things start to unravel. It's an odyssey, so it's a physical journey, but it's also a spiritual one, and in this case, it's a spiritual unraveling. So I shot the movie in Alaska, in a few different locations in Alaska. One of the locations was Sheep's Mountain near the town of Eureka, which if you've ever been there, you'll know that there's a gas station connected to a diner, and then they rent out a few rooms in the back that you can sleep in, and that's the town. It's a really small town. So we shot there, and that was a very remote location. We had, in order to get to and from set, the only way to get there was by a snowmobile. And then we also shot around Anchorage just a little bit, and then in southern Alaska near Girdwood, which is a ski town, we shot up in the mountains north of Girdwood.
Oh, okay, excellent. And, you know, I don't want to spoil it for listeners, and because I want them to go out and see this film, but I do want to say that you do, in fact, get to see the monster, or Frankenstein's monster, in the film. Could you tell me a little bit about how you developed the look for this creature?
Yeah, you know, we'll be talking a little bit about the Boris Karloff Frankenstein, which visually is very different from the novel, and I'm treating the novel as thinly veiled nonfiction. So I basically put forth the idea that most of the elements in Mary Shelley's Frankenstein are true, with some embellishment, but the creature in Mary Shelley's novel is unlike the Boris Karloff character or the character we used to see in cinema. This is a character that is hideously disgusting in terms of its physical appearance, but is incredibly powerful, tall, strong. Where it differs from the Frankenstein we're used to seeing is that in the novel, the creature is incredibly fast, agile, and highly intelligent. It's fluent in multiple languages, and just it's of superhuman strength, but also intelligence. In terms of like where it is now versus the novel, 200 years have passed, And I explain as to how this thing could still be alive after 200 years, because it was an experiment, among other things, in longevity. And this is true, and actually historically true in terms of alchemists who were looking for the Philosopher's Stone. This goes back thousands of years, and people like Sir Thomas Aquinas and even Isaac Newton were alchemists trying to find this magical elixir of life. And so Frankenstein is just one further experimentation in that attempt. So but the creature's 200 years removed from the novel. And so what's happened in these 200 years? Well, he's been living in the Arctic, which is where the novel ends. So in terms of his clothing, he's adapted to, you know, the clothing that befits his surrounding. And he's also, his experiences with humans have gone very badly. So he's this, you know, reclusive, shadowy figure. And so even though he's in the novel, you know, is eloquent and highly intelligent, he's removed himself and lived in isolation for 200 years. And that's taken a serious toll on him, I believe, psychologically. I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, in terms of him, whether you see him speaking or not, I wouldn't say, but I would say that after his experience, past experiences with people, he's, you know, perhaps taken a vow of silence. He's not interested in talking to people because he's been rejected time and time again.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent. Well, again, I want to thank you so much for joining us here today. Andrew Weiner, on behalf of the Frankenstein Theory, again, opens exclusively tomorrow, exclusively at Harkins, AMC, Arizona Center 24, along with several other locations throughout the country. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure, guys. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Andrew. All right. Well, this you've had two great guests.
We've got a now, third one, too.
We have a third one, and we'll take a break right now. And I just really love directors, producers. I mean, the talent is phenomenal. The eye, you know, their eye, their vision to be able to see what perhaps a movie will look like is a phenomenal talent. I wish I could do it. I don't know if I can. Maybe I'll be a director. Tommy, by the end of the break, when we start, give me the yes or no, whether I can be a director. We'll be right back.